We're happy to welcome to the show today as our interview guest, Dr. Caleb Brooks from the University of Illinois, here to talk about a microreactor that they have planned for the campus. Welcome to the program, Dr. Brooks.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thanks for joining us today. Why don't you introduce yourself to the audience and tell us a little bit about this project coming up.
Yeah, thanks. I'm Caleb Brooks. I'm an associate professor at the University of Illinois in the Department of Nuclear Plasma and Radiological Engineering. And my research generally is around expanding safe, peaceful uses of nuclear power. And I also do research on nuclear reactor systems and reactor safety. And we have a project now to prepare campus as an early site for a demonstration of a new type of nuclear reactor. So it should be noted that there are a lot of reactors on campuses around the country. Actually, the first sustained fission chain reaction was on a university campus up in Chicago. And nuclear has found a home at a lot of campuses for advancing state-of-the-art science and technology around nuclear physics, as well as enabling development of research necessary to advance the commercial nuclear sector. And so on the University of Illinois campus, we had a reactor that operated very safely in the heart of our campus for 38 years before it was shut down and returned to greenfield status. And we hope to bring a new advanced research and test reactor to our campus to start to look towards the advanced reactor technologies and perform the research and the workforce development necessary to see those advanced reactor technologies be widely economic, safe, and deployable.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and let's see, where is this going to go, and what, besides research, what is its purpose?
Yeah, that's a great question. So at this stage, we've considered two potential sites. The actual siting of the reactor system itself is subject to review by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and then also a NEPA review from an environmental impact standpoint. And so, you know, we're within the process of preparing the documentation for evaluation of those sites. Right now, our plan is to co-locate it with Abbott Power Plant. Abbott Power Plant is the power plant on campus that provides 100% of the steam needs for our campus. And you know, campus is a large energy user. To give you some numbers, we're a little over 60 megawatts or so of steam demand. And then in the past, you know, few years, we've been over 50 megawatts of electricity demand. And so Abbott Power Plant provides all the steam needs for campus. Most of that steam is for heating buildings, but it's also used for other, you know, it's used for research purposes, used for cleaning. It's used, you know, for some for running steam-driven chillers for our chilled water system. And Abbott Power Plant is a hybrid coal natural gas facility that provides that steam, and then as a byproduct also produces electricity. On the electricity side, we get some electricity from Abbott through that cogeneration model, but then we also have two solar farms. We've got wind power purchase agreement with a nearby wind farm. We've got we mostly pull electricity off of the surrounding grid. And so for our plans, it is a research and education tool. The deployment of an advanced research reactor is primarily there for research and education. But we really see research much more holistically than current research reactors. We're not just interested in understanding how the physics of the system works, but we also want to do research and develop a workforce around the kind of critical enabling and synergistic technologies that are necessary for the reactor to be, you know, widely commercializable. And so with this unit, we do plan as a research activity to integrate its power generation with Abbott Power Plant. Mm. So the reactor itself produces energy, and it actually it dissipates that energy to a molten salt, a liquid salt. And from that liquid salt, we can do many things with that energy. We can create steam, and that steam can be sent to Abbott Power Plant, and Abbott can utilize that steam just like it would steam that is produced from their coal boilers or their natural gas steam generation. Or we can use that high temperature salt to run chemical processes, and we can look at the production of clean hydrogen, which has a lot of interest in decarbonizing our economy as well, or other energy-intensive processes. A lot of people, when they think about a clean energy future, mostly think of the electric grid and how we need to decarbonize our electric grid. But there's a lot of other sectors that require very high heat that traditional renewables are going to have a hard time meeting that need. So nuclear, particularly the class of nuclear that we aim to demonstrate on campus, is really well suited to decarbonize those sectors of energy demand, which includes hydrogen generation or even ammonia for fertilizers, clean steel manufacturing, many different areas of decarbonization need a clean heat source, and that's a great alignment with what nuclear can provide.
How does this reactor compare in size to, say, the ones that are located at the Clinton Power Station? It's called a micro reactor. How small
That's
is
right.
it?
Yeah, thanks for that. Micro reactors are a new class of nuclear technology. You know, in the past, the thought around the economics of nuclear was bigger is better, or bigger is more profitable. And so we saw a lot of what we would call grid scale or centralized power generation stations are what we've deployed in the past in this country. Now there's a push towards a smaller, more modular type of nuclear. That's called a small modular reactor. And then there are others. This micro reactor term really refers to an even smaller size reactor that can be fully factory fabricated and then delivered to site, basically ready for kind of plug-and-play type of operation. So these are much smaller devices. Their size can range quite a bit. They can be less than a megawatt all the way up to perhaps 20 megawatts, just because of that constraint that it needs to be fully factory fabricated. In our case, the reactor will be 15 megawatts, but will have a 20-year core life. So if operated at 100% capacity for its life, it would have enough fuel there for 20 years without needing to open up the reactor or change out any fuel. And so that's a 200 times smaller device than you might see at a traditional commercial nuclear power plant today.
Has there been any concern expressed by anyone on campus or the general public? Because there obviously has been opposition to nuclear facilities in the past. So what do you say to people who express that concern?
Yeah, we've seen so much enthusiasm around this project from students, from community members, from members within the leadership of campus and then externally. And it's been a really exciting project. When most people think about nuclear power, they immediately go to the existing commercial power plants. Mm-hmm. That's really 1970s technology. And so it's been really exciting to share all of the advancements that have happened around nuclear in 50 years. If you think about, you know, cell phone technology, for example, in the 1970s and how far it's come, I think nuclear has had a challenge of being able to communicate and being able to demonstrate advances that have happened. And so with these smaller designs, we benefit from more than 50 years of kind of new concepts around safety, new concepts around fuel and nuclear waste. There's a lot that goes into these new designs that has been really great to share with people who might only think of nuclear by those light water 1970s type of technologies.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit more about that? And not so technical, where our the common
sure.
person doesn't understand, but like Clinton Power Station is a boiling water reactor, and other power plants maybe pressurized water reactors, and those are certainly the most common power reactors. How is this different? How does this technology make this reactor design safer?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it does it through a couple of ways. And first, I'd point to maybe the challenge in safety of existing light water reactor technologies. So the primary thing that you're concerned with reactor systems is what we call a neutronic accident, so like a runaway excursion of nuclear power. So that gets designed out within the physics of the systems in this country. So to get licensed with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, you need to show that the physics of the chain reaction, so fission is a neutron going and splitting an atom, creating more neutrons. Those neutrons go off and split more atoms. What we need to make sure is that if the temperature gets too high, or if we lose coolant, if those sorts of things happen, that chain reaction can't continue. So mm-hmm. that's the first thing we design away, mm-hmm. is the ability of the reactor to kind of run away with this power generation. So that's shared by all technologies that are looking to be licensed in this country, certainly true of microreactors. The second issue, or the second major design consideration, is that after you shut down the reactor, so after you stop that chain reaction, for nuclear, the power generation doesn't stop. For all other thermal energy generation systems, if you stop the oxygen to your combustion, or if you stop shoveling coal into your burner, then the heat generation stops. In the case of nuclear, that's not true. So once you stop the chain reaction, there's still a little bit under 10% of the operating power is still generated. And it's going to be generated, and that power will decay off with time. And so in the case of existing nuclear systems, if they're at 3,000 megawatts, then at the point of shutdown, you still have a substantial amount of energy being generated in your reactor that needs to be removed. So you need to have large pumping systems, a large amount of water that you can make sure to flood into the reactor to cool the system even after it's been shut down. So in the case of Three Mile Island, in the case of Fukushima, both those systems had no problem in shutting down. They had actually been shut down for some time, but the need to have these backup auxiliary systems to provide water to remove that what we call decay heat, that's ultimately what led to partial core melting. Mm-hmm. So in the case of these advanced systems, particularly microreactors, having 200 times less power means you have mm-hmm. 200 times less decay heat that you have to deal with. So these systems can be designed to have very large surface areas to easily convect away that decay heat without the need of active and substantial backup systems to keep it cool. So in these cases, that additional decay heat can be radiated through to structures and easily dealt with. In the case of an existing power plant immediately at shutdown, it's at 15 megawatts, mm-hmm. right? And in our case, at shutdown, now it's down at 1.5 megawatts or less, and within a day, it's like the power output of maybe a truck or something. So it's much less energy that needs to be dealt with.
Best case scenario. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. It's okay.
Well, I was just going to ask, best case scenario, how quickly do you think this is going to be functional, up and running? And worst case, I guess maybe it never gets done, but depending on how the agencies deal with it, what's the best possible case for that?
Yeah, so the timeline on the project, there's a lot of demonstration and advanced reactor projects that are happening around the country right now. We're excited about the timeline of ours. We benefit from a research focus, and therefore our pathway to licensing, I think, is well defined. And so with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, we look to get a construction permit in the next few years. And then after a construction permit, and that construction permit requires our preliminary safety analysis, as well as our environmental impact. If granted a construction permit, then we apply for what's called an operating license. That takes another few years to get mm-hmm. the operating license. And during that timeline, we would be doing a lot of the site preparation. So if successful with the project, then we would look to have the reactor operational end of 2027, early 2028.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One last question. When this thing is up and operating, is it operating 24 hours a day, or do you shut it down at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and when you come in at 8 the next morning, you fire it up and do that? And if it is operating round the clock, will there be people there, operators, manning it, staffing it at all times?
Yeah. So at any point during operation, there are strict guidelines that are spelled out in the license itself for the manpower you need to operate. And this would be no different. Actually, university reactors typically benefit from having a lot of operators and a lot of people that are overseeing the reactor system. Anytime it's in operation, we would have multiple trained operators overseeing the system. In our approach to this, we aim to demonstrate electricity production, again, as a research activity by integrating with Abbott, demonstrate the utilization of steam, like district heating through Abbott, the generation of hydrogen production, and then this integrated energy storage that this device would have through that high-temperature molten salt. And so based on the research and education needs, I think that will be the predominant factor that drives the operation timeline of the system itself.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds great. Is there anything you wanted to say about it that you haven't had a chance to yet? Or
go ahead. I'd invite your listeners to reach out. You can reach out to me. My email is Stephen Brooks, Brooks, @illinois.edu, or directly to the team at micro-reactor@illinois.edu. The Tuesday of every month in the mornings, we have an open kind of Q&A in Talbot Laboratory. That's 104 South Wright Street. Please come on out if you'd like to talk with anyone from the team. That's a good time to do it. But you can always send me an email, and I love talking about the project and love hearing from people on any side of the issue.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We'll have to have you on as you're making progress in this project. And certainly when it's all complete and up and running, we'll be interested to hear all about the research that's associated with it. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Dr. Caleb Brooks of the University of Illinois.